I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ. All the way out there in Los Angeles, California, it's old friend, Jovan Bua of The Athletic. Jovan, did you know you first came on to one of my shows 8 years ago?
I did not. I did not realize it's been that long. That just shows how old both of us are and how long we've been doing this. But that's a fun fact I didn't know.
We're entering our mid-30s now, Jovan. It's just, we're at the age where if we tell someone about the ESPN True Hoop Network, they look at you with a just a raised eyebrow, like, what are you talking about? And you're like, no, Clipper blog, like Kevin Hartovitz, and no, it was a thing, the Hardwood Paroxysm, I promise, it was really cool. It was this thing that we were all writing and a part of. Yeah, it's a long way, feels way longer than it actually was. But I mean, yeah, that's, I just saw it when I sent you the link here for tonight. I was like, I scrolled up and I was like, oh my god, like, this is kind of crazy that we're at this point. But look, two married men by the end of the year, Jovan. Like, we're growing up on this program.
We are.
I love it. Well, speaking of basketball, technically the ESPN True Hoop Network, we are going to talk some Lakers, some NBA, and a lot of fun stuff here on this program. After there is just a lot of interesting situations, or a lot of storylines coming down the pike here with this NBA season the last week here. Mavs get to 50 wins now after tonight. You look at the Rockets making a late season playoff push. They ultimately don't get there. The Magic are kind of reeling, and we don't really know. They could be in the play-in, and it just seemed like they were just locked into a 4 or 5 for a while. It's pretty wild that we have this much just stuff on the line here in the last week. And one of those teams that has a lot on the line still this last week, I mean, you even talked about it, like, have the Lakers even already played their last game at Crypto.com Arena. I mean, when you look at where the Lakers are, though, and going back to what you saw and what you thought and wrote about before the season got started, Jovan, are you surprised at how the season has gone and that they currently find themselves where they do with a week left in the year?
Yes. I am pretty surprised by it. You know, entering the season, I think I had the Lakers 5th in my championship rankings behind Denver, Boston, Phoenix, and Milwaukee. I think I had them neck and neck with Milwaukee, so like 4th or 5th. And I think you had me on, in the preseason, we kind of debated it. You were a bit lower on the Lakers for the second consecutive season, and for the second consecutive season, you were right about being lower on the Lakers, though I do think, depending on if they can get into the playoffs and depending on the side of the bracket that they're on, they could go on another Cinderella run and then ultimately just get, you know, ran over by the buzzsaw that is the Denver Nuggets. But I think, like, if you told, because there's so many layers to it, and I'm going to try and condense it because we could have a whole hour-long discussion about what has gone wrong for this group this season. But I think looking at, if you told me LeBron James and Anthony Davis were going to be as healthy as they've both been this season, I would have guessed this is like at minimum a 52-win team. Like, I think depending on their over under changed, I think it lowered a little bit throughout the summer, but like at one point I want to say it was around like 51, 52 wins. And like that felt appropriate based on the way that they closed last season, the way that they made the conference finals, and on paper entering the season with a better roster. Now they've had some injuries. Jared Vanderbilt is probably their fifth or sixth most important player. He's been out for half the season. Gabe Vincent was their primary offseason addition. He's been out for basically the whole season. Taurean Prince and Cam Reddish have played way more important roles than they probably should have for any competitive basketball team. And that, I think, has been a big issue. And you had like Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura randomly getting benched at different points of the season. So like, I think some of it has been self-inflicted wounds. The Lakers had a stretch after the in-season tournament where they went 3-10. And you take out that 3-10 stretch, they're right there with the Clippers and the Mavericks in terms of win percentage. So like, like this random month where again some of those guys get benched, they lose to the Spurs, that they're losing to bad teams, and that was the season. Like that if they end up losing in the play-in or they end up losing in the first round because they were a 7 or 8 seed, it's because of that stretch in December and in January. So I think there's a lot of factors that led to the position that they're in now, where as of tomorrow night they will likely be the 10 seed, assuming that Golden State beats Memphis or whoever they're, I think they're playing. Oh no, they're playing Portland. Sorry. Assuming they beat Portland, which they most likely will, the Lakers will be the 10 seed at that point with two games left. And it's like, again, having LeBron and AD as healthy as they've been, even Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell have largely been healthy. Like your four best players have been healthy, but everything around them has been a bit of a mess.
It's one of those things that now that you've been around LeBron for several years now, Jovan, I mean, one of the things I've wondered about, like you seeing day to day, like you talked about like that December stretch, right? And how like it's easy when you're in the thick of the things. And this is like one of those things where it feels like the games matter a lot more at the end of the year than they actually do in December and January. But like you just pointed out, those games count just the same. So at the time, like, is that something that you've brought up to LeBron, or it's one of those things where it's like, hey man, like this is, I know it feels like the season's young and that you have time to kick it into gear, but like losing these kind of games or having this kind of stretch can actually be the difference in you making a deep playoff run, and that you might find yourself in the play-in because the West is so deep, because of how thin the margin of error is. Like, is that something that the team cared a lot about and it still just didn't go their way and LeBron thinks about? Or do you think LeBron's at a point in his career where he's like, he really just doesn't really care about the seeding, and he's just like, if we're healthy we can beat anybody, and as long as we get in there then let's just see what happens?
I think that there's more of an element of the latter. But you are bringing up an interesting dynamic within the Lakers of building around a 39-year-old who's in year 21. And there have been stretches during the season where LeBron James has not played, let's say, the best defense. And part of that has been because he's a 39-year-old who has played the most minutes in NBA history. And asking that guy to be a 35 to 38 minute a night guy and carry the offense at times, carry the offense in the fourth quarter and crunch time, and play locked in defense during that entire stretch that he's on the floor, like that's a lot to ask of a guy who was dealing with an ankle injury last season that has now lingered into this season. He's been listed as questionable basically every game this year, and he's played more often than not, and I think exceeded expectations from a games played overall standpoint. But he has been managing this left ankle injury, and it's basically a degenerative tendon or tendonitis in his left ankle. So like, I think that's one of the challenges of building a roster around him, is you're trying to complement his strengths and sort of filling in the gaps and the holes around him. But you also have to factor in, like, you can't really have defensive liabilities out there. And that's where at times, like when D'Angelo Russell is at his worst, which I thought he was in that Golden State game, of you know, being lackadaisical defensively, not really having any urgency, taking bad shots, and just being inefficient. Like, that's where I think that there's a trickle down effect, and you've seen it at times with different role players being out. They've had to rely on more offensive minded guys, and then the defense has just completely collapsed. So I think it's just more of an interesting like thing within like how the Lakers build out the roster for next season and the season after that. Like, I think they have to lean more into size and defense and athleticism and really try to support LeBron and AD in that way. Because for you know, parts of the season, I just think they were too small. They weren't good enough defensively, and they just didn't have that requisite level of physicality that you need against the very best teams. So, but like the urgency thing was definitely there in December and January. Like, I had a report with Shams Charania in early January when they lost four in a row about a deepening disconnect within the locker room. And a big part of it was the Lakers ran it back with the group that made the conference finals, but then that group was barely playing together. And they started the season, Taurean Prince, Austin Reeves, and D'Angelo Russell, and they get off to a slow start. They start 3-5. That lineup isn't working, and they end up benching Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell before they benched Taurean Prince. It took them 50 games to bench Taurean Prince, and he was brought in as a guy on a biannual exception, making $4.5 million. And he was playing over Jared Vanderbilt, who the team just signed to a four-year extension, and Rui Hachimura, who was one of the breakout guys in the playoffs, and they signed to a three-year $51 million contract over the summer. So it was like kind of this cognitive dissonance of the team is investing in these younger, higher upside guys who help them go on a Western Conference Finals run, and yet the coaching staff is prioritizing minimum guys and guys who are, you know, barely hanging on in the league in like a Cam Reddish over more established guys and just better basketball players. And it took them 50-ish games to finally start Rui Hachimura and find this lineup that has now had a lot of success. But had they done that game 20, game 30, or even game one, I think we're talking about a team that's right there with like the Clippers and the Mavericks and competing for like seeds 4, 5, 6 rather than potentially a 10 seed.
So you think if the sample size was significantly larger, you don't think there'd be diminishing returns there? You think it would have played out?
I think there'd be on some level, of course, like, you know, because their win pace with Rui Hachimura, like the starting lineup of AD, LeBron, Rui, Austin, D'Lo, they've won at like a 55-56-1 pace. I'm not saying that that would be the same case, but would they be 48-50 wins? I think that's a bit more realistic. And yeah, in the West right now, with how tight this race is, like, even, I mean, looking at, like, add three more wins to the Lakers' ledger and they vault up to the sixth seed.
Yeah.
And again, like, right there with the Mavericks, like, right behind them. So I think even with, like, the same injuries, right? Because again, Vando's a very important part of this roster. He's been out for over half the season. Gabe Vincent was out. And those were two of their better defensive players, two of the guys supposed to prop up the defense. And despite that, they've still found ways to be competitive on that end. But to me, even with the same injuries, if you just restarted the season and had Rui Hachimura in place of Taurean Prince, because there was games, like if you go back and look at some of the November, December box scores, there are games where Taurean Prince is playing 35 minutes and Rui Hachimura is playing 18. And like, that's just because it's not, because some people will say, oh, the starting lineup, like, doesn't matter who starts, but like, it matters when the coach is playing the starters way more minutes than the bench. And it's not like Taurean was this token starter just coming in and playing like 20 minutes. He was playing, I mean, he was leading the team in minutes for stretches of the season, or top three for stretches of the season. And like, that's just, he's not qualified to be a starting small forward on like a contender or a team that wants to be a contender. So I think that's been one of the, like, and he's last on the team in plus minus. And that's another factor here of just like, they have really lost and struggled in the Taurean minutes. And he's been better now off the bench in like a 15 to 18 minute role, but it should not have taken till game 51 or whatever it was to determine that. Like, the lineup data was conclusive. The eye test was conclusive. Players were hinting at it in the locker room, and yet it just never really happened. So I think that's basically what was the theme of my story last night. And my post-game reaction video of just like, these are the losses that they had in December and January as they were doing these like odd experiments with the rotation and with lineups. playing these lineups that didn't really make sense. And they really struggled during that stretch. And like, that's the stretch that's now coming back to haunt them, because now you can't afford LeBron to get the flu or AD to get poked in the eye. Like, you lost that margin for error months ago, and now you need those guys. And the fact that you just lost them, like, it might cost you the season now.
And then you look at it, I mean, do you think they get out of the play-in? Like, does this Lakers team feel like, because of the hole that they've dug, do you even think they end up in the playoffs based on the matchups that they're looking at here?
I think it really depends on the path, because there's still a shot that, so, you know, again, as of tomorrow, they will likely be 10. But if Golden State loses and the Lakers went out, they pass them. Sacramento, New Orleans, Phoenix, they all have some tough games coming up. They all, New Orleans and Sacramento still play each other. So that's a factor in terms of dropping one of those teams. So there's still a path for the Lakers to get to probably like eighth is their ceiling realistically. But that is a big difference between being number eight and being number nine in terms of having two shots to advance versus single elimination in the 9-10 game. So to me, it's going to come down to, like, if they're 10, it's still possible that they make it. But I think if they can draw Sacramento in one of the two games, I think that, like, I think everyone wants to play Sacramento right now with no Monk, no Kevin Herter. Like, those are two big blows for them. And just a loss of offensive firepower, loss of shooting, spacing. Like, those are two big offensive pieces for the Kings. They've been in a rut lately. They've blown several big leads. They blew a big lead to New York. They just blew a big lead to Oklahoma City. So, like, I think people teams in the West right now are looking at the Kings as, like, food. As, like, let's get the Kings and you know, we'll at least win that game, and then we can worry about the other game. But I really think it depends who they draw. If it's 9-10 Golden State, it's going to be tough to go into Golden State and win that game. If Sacramento drops, I think if that's the 9-10, I think they would beat Sacramento. But then again, now you're looking at Golden State, Phoenix, or New Orleans. Like, I think they beat New Orleans, but I do have some pause with Golden State and Phoenix. Those are the two I look at of... So I guess if you're asking me, like, I would put it at 50-50 odds, depending on the seeding. But if I had to pick in the head-to-head matchups, I think they lose to Golden State on the road. I think if they somehow are hosting Golden State, they'd win that. But assuming they're on the road, I think they would lose at Golden State or at Phoenix. And I think they would win at New Orleans or at Sacramento. So to me, it's really 50-50, depending on how the bracket shakes out.
Interesting. Do you think, based on, I mean, we'll have to see how the season plays out, but do you think there is, like, if you had to say over 50% or under 50%, because a lot of this seems like to me there's a disconnect, and like part of the reason the season isn't going to end up potentially being what it could have been is that Darvin Ham's rotations and choices backfired. Lakers Twitter seems like they're not majority pro Darvin Ham, from what I've gathered. Do you think the front office shares that sentiment, and the players share that sentiment, that this could be it for Darvin Ham? We're like over 50% or under 50% he's back next year?
I think it depends on how the season ends. If they lose, like if they finish as the 10 seed and lose in the 9-10 game, I think it's difficult to bring him back. I'm not saying he won't be brought back in that scenario, but I think it's hard to justify it going from being in the conference finals and winning. Cause last year they went on a crazy run. I think they closed the season something like 22-7 or whatever. And like they were winning at a 50 plus win pace, and to go off of that with this core and go on a conference finals run to losing in the 9-10 play-in game and not even making the playoffs. Like, that is such a disastrous fall off that I think it's hard to justify bringing him back. Now, I think the Lakers have also lacked stability at the coaching position in recent years. That, you know, in less than a 6-7 year span, maybe 7-8, they went through Byron Scott, Luke Walton, Frank Vogel, Darvin Ham.
That feels like forever ago.
He
got lost in the
first year of LeBron, Luke Walton. And like, so I think for them, like they view Darvin as both a ready now coach and a coach who would grow and had some promise. And like, so I think, I mean, you can look at like objectively his resume of winning, you know, getting to the Western Conference Finals in year one and winning the in-season tournament in year two, and then potentially let's just say like they make the playoffs and like win a round, like that's a pretty good resume for a coach in their first two seasons. So to me, it really depends on like, do they lose in the play-in? Do they lose in round one? Or do they lose in round one to a non-Denver team? Because I also think that's going to kind of color it where like, if they just play Denver round one and get their asses kicked, like, sure. I mean, most teams in the West are probably going to get their asses kicked by Denver, and Denver's probably going to roll to the finals. But if they play like Oklahoma City and or Minnesota, at teams that they theoretically have a shot against, and they lose in like five games, then it's a bit of a different conversation again of like, you know, why were they not prepared enough or whatnot in the series. So I think the context here really matters. For that reason, I would probably go over 50% chance he is back. Because I think just looking at the potential scenarios with this team, that there's probably higher odds of a positive scenario marginally, at least like making the playoffs. Like, I think that's still within the realm of possibility, but we'll see. Like, I don't, because that's, so I guess to answer your question about front office for players, I think the front office and ownership have a lot more confidence in Darvin Ham than the players do in the locker room. I think the situation has gotten better as he has found better lineups and better rotations and kind of stabilized that. And so there's also just been a level of consistency, because that was kind of part of it too, is it wasn't just maybe not starting the right guys or closing the right guys, but in general, there were nights where player X would play 8 minutes, and then on the next night he would play 24 minutes, and like just vacillating night to night to such a dramatic degree that a lot of players complained about not being in rhythm and not knowing what their role was. So the fact that he finally settled on that a couple months ago, I think has been a positive. I think that the team chemistry has never been better than it currently is. But I think if you gave people truth serum, like they're still not like they're still holding on to some of the stuff that happened earlier in the season that they haven't forgotten about it. And again, if they end up falling short in the first or second play-in matchup, I think that's where people are going to point to is like, you know, why weren't some of these lineups playing more earlier in the season? Why did it? I mean, they're finally going to start Jared Vanderbilt the game that he got injured, and he ended up starting that game because no LeBron and AD, but like he was about to become the full-time starter, and then he gets injured, and we'll see if he even comes back this season. So like they've had some bad luck with injuries to be sure, but again, a lot of it has been self-inflicted wounds in terms of just not playing their best players for whatever reason. That, I mean, that's kind of been the other thing, is that there's not been a clear reason. It's not like, you know, this guy is like a bad guy or like a cancer in the locker room or like he's late to practice or doesn't try hard. It's, there's really been like none of those reasons given or explained publicly or privately. So it's just been a lot of head scratching in terms of like, why are lesser players playing above better players? So I think within the locker room that there's still some, I don't want to say concern, but like maybe skepticism. Within the front office, I think there's a lot more confidence in certain parts in terms of moving forward and continuing to grow and develop as a coach.
Interesting. Final thing here on the Lakers, and we'll talk some broader NBA here. Trae Young. He involves my team. He is back. I didn't think we'd see him again the rest of the way here, but he's back. DeJounte Murray's played really good basketball without Trae Young. I think it was Mark Stein this week who it comes out a report of like it's likely that the Hawks either trade DeJounte Murray or Trae Young. Both have been linked. You talked about Trae Young and the Lakers link. DeJounte Murray at the deadline was something that was like, oh, is he going to get moved? Is that a Laker at the deadline type deal? Does your gut just kind of, in your reporting and what reading the tea leaves, does it feel like to you the Lakers and the Hawks end up being trade partners this summer, whether that's DeJounte or Trae? Does it feel like one or the other is likely Los Angeles bound?
So my default stance with these types of scenarios are they're always more likely than not to not happen, right? Just because, I mean, like Dame basically was telegraphing he wanted to go to Miami. And I know part of that was some bad blood in that situation for various reasons. But like, I mean, Dame, like if there was ever a superstar trade that was like bound to happen on paper, it was Dame having all that goodwill in Portland, wanting to go to Miami, Miami theoretically having at least a competitive package, and that sort of being a shoe-in terms of just that deal happening. And the fact that it didn't, Like that to me kind of speaks to, I think teams are starting to take back some of the power from stars and not acquiesce to them as much as they were in recent seasons. So I think that could potentially set a precedent of not necessarily bending the knee to the player and just giving them what they want. Because if anyone deserved to get that, it was Dame Lillard after the stretch that he had in Portland and just being a franchise icon and just being as great of an ambassador as you can be for an organization, and the not asking out. I think he could have asked out several years earlier and probably should have for the benefit of his career, but he chose not to. He tried to make it work and ultimately, you know, eventually got to the point where it was best to move on. So looking at to get to, you know, the Hawks and Trey, like I think looking at DeJounte and Trey, like Trey just, in my opinion, and I think in most people's opinion, like has greater trade value. I know the team obviously has played better with DeJounte in this stretch, and he started to rediscover the groove that he had in San Antonio as their go-to guy before he got traded to Atlanta. But in terms of just like, I mean, you have a level of star power with Trey. You have the name, you have the pedigree of the Eastern Conference Finals run, and you know the clutch shots and like all the branding and the mark, like all the stuff that kind of goes with being a star. Like I think Trey checks a lot of those boxes, and he's just going to command a greater return. So if I'm Atlanta, if I value them similarly, or maybe at least close enough where it's not like it's that big of a drop off if you trade one versus the other, I trade the guy who has more trade value. Now there's the matter of what they can get, and the Lakers can offer 3 first round picks. They could throw in Austin Reeves, though I think they would fight to keep him, although maybe Trey's such a star that's one of the deals they're willing to give up Austin. But you know, Rui Hachimura probably has to be in that deal to make the math work. They have second round picks they can trade. In terms of young talent, not a lot of enticing young guys. But I think the Lakers would certainly be in the mix. There's the clutch connection. Trey has been to Laker games as a bystander in the crowd before, went last year during the playoffs. So I think that there's been some breadcrumbs certainly between the two sides. And, you know, from what I've heard in terms of Laker trade targets this summer, it's been Trae Young, Kyrie Irving, and Donovan Mitchell. Those are the three names that you hear in some form or fashion in talking to people around both the team and just talking to people around the league. Like those are the three guys that potentially could, probably the three biggest names that could potentially be available this summer. Now, we'll see. Like there's always a team that underachieves. There's always a star that becomes disgruntled. So there will likely be another star that emerges that we don't foresee. And maybe the Lakers can get involved in there as well. But I look at Trey, San Antonio would be really interesting with Victor Wembanyama. Like that would be theoretically like a perfect partnership in terms of just like, and I don't know if you're advancing the kind of the timeline with Victor, although he looks to me like a top 20 guy already, which is kind of insane. But in terms of like the guy you would want, like an elite pick and roll partner, although I don't think you want to make Victor just a roller. And that's kind of the concern there is like Victor can do more than just set screens and be like a Rudy Gobert offensively. But then defensively, you want Victor Wembanyama flanking Trae Young and kind of hiding his weaknesses. And like that's like the ultimate guy you could basically put on the back line there. So I look at those two teams as probably like the two teams that would make the most sense potentially for Trey. I know people have mentioned Minnesota and like this theoretical cat for Trey. And I think Atlanta would actually have to throw in more from a financial perspective just to make the trade work. But like, I don't know, are there any other teams that you kind of think of when you think of Trey and the trade market?
It's interesting. The thing about the Spurs is like Spurs are going to finish, I think, worse in the West again, right?
Yeah.
Something I've said to people where they talk about like we are on the like our NBA show that we do weekly with Corbin, Chris, and Kenny is like one of the things that I've posited that I think it's going to take NBA fans like our ilk, like the millennial NBA fans and analysts and writers that grew up with the Spurs being the world class organization for 20 years and just being able to pivot from David Robinson to Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard, like that seamless transition. But like there's been so much brain drain. Pop's future, I think, is still year to year. I think they're one of the worst organizations in the NBA right now. I think what they got for Kawhi was just a horrific package that set them back further. They've operated in a way like the DeJounte stuff was weird. They went into this year not giving Victor Wembanyama any point guard help at all. They were just like, figure it out, and then we'll maybe get Trey Jones in here. I think one of the weird things about the Spurs and the way that the way I see them is I just don't think they're well run anymore. I think that those days are long gone. I think they've been passed, and it's part of it. It kind of reminds me of the Patriots in a way, post Tom Brady. I just think it kind of caught up to him, where Bill Belichick's drafts were really bad and were getting worse, and he was trying to do too much in that whole doing GM, coach Bill. Like, it didn't work after a certain point. Now the Patriots are one of the worst teams in the NFL, and it just happens quickly. Where like, it doesn't disqualify those years, and it doesn't mean those years didn't matter and that you weren't at that point. But I think the Thunder are now what the Spurs were. Like, the Thunder have built that where they're transitioning, where they're going to pull off six straight, like, multi-time all-stars in a decade and a half with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Jalen Williams now, SGA now, and Chet Holmgren. Like, that's almost unheard of. Like, that, to get that, like, it's not even really luck, because Sam Presti deserves credit for building this and sticking to his plan, but like, they just kind of feel like the new Spurs to me. And I think that they're going to be in that 50 to 60 win window for years. They've built their new core. They have made that pivot. I don't think the Spurs are going to get out of the gutter. I don't think this goes well with Victor in San Antonio. I don't think they're going to make the right things to make this all work. I mean,
well, can I offer a quick counter?
Yeah.
I think you could argue that trading for Trae Young would go in with not being a well-run organization.
I would agree.
Not be a smart decision. So
I would agree.
That almost would, I think, even kind of prove your point of, yes. You're closer to the situation being in Atlanta and following that team more closely, but I still have my reservations about Trae Young at the highest levels. And just like I know his defense has gotten slightly better, but he's still a massive liability on that end. And I think some of the inefficiency stuff from a shooting perspective, like, and just being so heliocentric, and they're, in my opinion, being a little like, and just kind of the limitations of being a small guard. And there's a reason why we can count on one hand the guys that have really led a championship team as a under 6'4" guard, with Steph Curry and Isaiah Thomas. And like, even Tony Parker had Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, he had Pop. Like, I wouldn't even put him as like that. But so like, I just look at it, and sure, if he's on the Lakers, he's their third best player, so that probably properly slots him a little better. But I think if Trae's getting traded, he probably has to accept a role shift in a way that he is not used to, in terms of like giving the ball up way more than he's accustomed to. And it's unclear if he can make that adjustment. And again, I just think, so like, looking at it from that perspective, I think the Lakers make a little bit more sense, just because they have enough, like, they have a couple of guys that he would have to fall in line under. But he could also go into San Antonio and be like, I'm better than Victor. This is my team. I'm going to run the show. And like, so that's where I'm with you. Like, I don't know. It's probably not the right move in general, but I could also see San Antonio like overcorrecting because I think they've gotten a lot of criticism this year, and deservedly so, for how bad of a roster they've put around.
They lucked into Victor. And like, if Victor isn't just falling in their lap and they don't get lottery luck, like, we are talking about them as one of the worst run organizations, but they stumbled into Victor, and it's just, he's so generational that I think it's just clouding what's been happening for years. That has been kind of plain to see with what is happening in San Antonio. I would bet against it. And it's not against Victor. Victor is unbelievable. I would just bet against, so it's like when people are talking about Cheddar, Victor, I'm like, I mean, I'm gonna bet on Chet every single time for their careers. Like, I think Chet's in just an unbelievable situation, and Chet's been really, really good in Oklahoma City, and been better than I thought he was going to be in the NBA. For Trae, though, I just feel like the Lakers make a lot of sense, because like, also when you look at, I mean, you would know better than I, but like, this is it. Like, you're year to year, like, what do you have to lose? Like, for Trae to bring in somebody like Trae and that mercurial factor, I think you're like, why not? And then if LeBron retires, we can try LeBron, Trey and AD for a year or two and see what that looks like. I mean, that's still a lot of star power. That's still going to be fun. It's not a championship team or anything, but you never know. Like you just bring in Trey to see if that's enough. If you can't get Kyrie, if you can't get Donovan Mitchell, whatever. I think that's a worthy final gamble for the Lakers. Like, what were you doing anyway? You were throwing out D'Angelo Russell. You were throwing out Gabe Vincent, who hasn't been available all year long. Like, what do you have to lose? So I look at it in terms of the Lakers aspect and where LeBron's at in his career. I don't know what you have to lose if you're Los Angeles to go up to real pieces, because I think there are some folks where it's like that last pick, where that last first round pick that was so talked about. I'm like, when LeBron retires and when AD's wheels fall, it's going to be bad. Like, there's no way around it. Like, what? Like, just, you might as well just rip the Band-Aid off. Like, I just feel like the Lakers are headed towards some troublesome times once they're all gone, whether they want to admit it or not. So you might as well just go all the way out and add one more star, whether that's Trey, DeJounte, whoever, and see what happens. Because it's, so I think if you're a fan, you're like, hey, we tried, we did everything we could for those final years, and then LeBron retired, and then we saw it just like, it is what it is. Like, we got a title out of it. We went down swinging and that's it. But I don't see there being any other way this ends for LeBron and AD in Los Angeles, other than it's going to get ugly and it's going to be rough. So you might as well try and win one more ring and take a big swing on somebody like Trey, who could swing a playoff series. And I don't think anybody in the West would want to deal with Trey, LeBron and AD all at full health in a 7-game series.
Yeah. And I also think, based on the argument I was making for pairing Trey with Victor, you can make a similar argument for Trey with AD, where AD is going to cover for him defensively. AD has become a bit more of a pick and roll big nowadays, and just the threat of him as both a roller and a popper in the mid-range area, like that would be a perfect fit next to Trey as really the best, I think, pick and roll partner he's had when, you know, I know Capella's elite at that role, but like, you know, AD's obviously just at a different level as a scorer and as an offensive threat. So like, I don't know how you really guard a Trey AD pick and roll. I mean, that's where I look at him being part of the bridging the next era of Lakers basketball, where if LeBron only plays 2 more years, 3 more years, whatever it ends up being, then you can build around, like, AD, I think, will be 33, 34 around then. Trey will be late 20s, and that theoretically, if you can get the right pieces, can at least be a pretty competitive team, if not a contender.
About where you are right now.
Yeah. And so I think it makes sense. Like, you know, not to get too in the weeds. Like, I think for the Lakers, if there was a way to get, because I think they do need better wings. Like, that's been probably the biggest weakness of this team overall. Like, I look at a Mikal Bridges as someone that would really help them. Though the asking price I've heard is insane.
Yeah.
So I don't know how realistic that is, but like someone on kind of like that, almost in between, if you could keep like D'Angelo or Austin and then move one of them along with someone else and bring in, and then obviously the picks.
Well, I don't think D'Lo would go to Atlanta in any of these scenarios. I think,
and he's got a player option. He'll probably opt out and either re-sign with a team or sign elsewhere. So, there's a lot of moving parts with the situation, but I think if Trae Young is available, which it looks like he's going to be, the Lakers will certainly be in the mix and be, in my opinion, one of the front runners.
Interesting. More likely to make the Western Conference Finals, Jovan, because I don't think they both do. And now that Oklahoma City's fallen down to the 3 seed and Denver's moved up to this 2, it makes it a little bit more interesting, but when you look at Oklahoma City and Minnesota, I think one end up making it, because I think people are going to talk themselves out of both because they're both fresh and both new to this kind of playoff atmosphere and these kind of expectations that you kind of have to go through it a little bit before you get to that top tier, like deep Western Conference playoff run. But I do think one of them makes it. From your vantage point, do you think it's more likely that Minnesota makes it? Or do you think Oklahoma City, with their youth and uncharted waters, with their team age, they're the ultimate Western Conference team to play the Nuggets? Or I guess they wouldn't be able to, because they'd have to beat the Nuggets in round 2 based on the current seeding.
Yeah, I would go with, and I guess I'm going to speak in a vacuum here. So I understand the seeding could end up impacting this, but I'm actually going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think they're a contender hiding in plain sight right now. where they're currently fourth in offense and fourth in defense. The only other team in the top five in both is Boston, and Boston is having a historic season on paper. Like, on paper, Boston should be the heavy favorites, even with Denver and their pedigree and stuff. Like, Boston is having an all-time season, or an all-time regular season right now. Like the likes of 96 Bulls, 2017 Warriors, like they're right there behind those teams in several metrics. But putting Boston aside, OKC is the only team that's top five in offense and defense. And I think because of the inexperience, because Shea has kind of emerged out of nowhere as this like MVP level guy, where I think a lot of people, it was okay, like this guy's interesting. Okay, this guy's an all-star. Like, okay, this guy's like maybe like a borderline top 10 guy, to like this season, he's going to be probably top three on most people's ballots for MVP. And like the Thunder coming out of nowhere. Like, I remember, I think Bill Simmons is one of the only national people that was high on the Thunder, was picking them to be like a 50 plus win team. And most people, I think I had them like sixth or seventh in the West. Like, most people had them as a low tier playoff team or a play-in team. And for them to, they've fallen off a bit, but they were first in the West for a lot of the season. Like, they were ahead of both Minnesota and Denver for good stretches there. So and they still could finish. Like, the Minnesota and Denver are currently playing as we're recording this, and but we'll see what ends up happening with that game. But OKC is still one loss behind those teams. One of them is going to lose, so they're going to be tied with OKC, and OKC could win out based on their schedule. So just looking at it, I think I trust Shea as a late game shot creator more than I do Anthony Edwards. Also, Jalen Williams has been, I think, one of the most under-discussed rising stars in the league in terms of, like, he's actually been more of their go-to guy than Shea in crunch time. And he's becoming like a borderline top 20, 25 guy. And he's still in, what, his third season? So, like,
they could have three top 25 guys next year.
They could. And and Chet, as you mentioned, like, I mean, Victor is doing some crazy stuff and having like 30 point near quadruple doubles on a nightly basis. But like, at most other years, Chet would be the runaway rookie of the year. And we'd be talking about like, Chet is the next great big man and the next great, like, you know, young prospect. So it's just being overshadowed because Victor is an alien. So I look at all that and like, I do think that there's one clear weakness with this team, and that's where the Lakers have been able to exploit it in their matchups. And I look at a potential matchup against Minnesota or Denver, some of the bigger teams in the West being able to exploit them, of just like the lack of size in the interior and the lack of defensive rebounding. Like, that has been an issue in a lot of their close losses to good teams. They've been pounded on the glass, you know, getting scored on inside. Chet can struggle with getting in foul trouble against more physical, imposing big men. So that's the one hole that I think they're going to have to address at some point down the road. But turning it back to Minnesota, you've now been playing without.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Out Karl Anthony Towns for several weeks. You were having some success without him, but now having to reacclimate him, you're going to have to change the offense. And of course, you'd rather have Kat than not have Kat. So I'm not going to make that argument that you don't want to have Kat, but like, there is just a reacclimation process there of just, you know, readjusting the offense. And in general, like, Minnesota has been a below average offense all season. They struggled in crunch time because of their crunch time offense. And I just look at, like, yes, they're big, they're really good defensively, but something about the Ant, Cat, Rudy trio, I just don't fully trust with Ant. It's more of just, he's so young, and he's even like, Shea's young, but Shea's 24, 25. Like, Shea's, at least he's been in the playoffs a couple times. Like, he's got some seasoning to him. Ant has also been in the playoffs, but he's still at 22, not fully formed yet, and still growing as a star. And then Cat, like Cat and Rudy, I don't trust it. I just don't like, I don't love it as a combo. There's some like Rudy has been exposed at times in the playoffs. I think not to the extent that people make it out to, but like you can play him off the floor if you go small, or at least make him not as effective defensively if you have to stretch him out. Cat, I just don't love as like a number two option. So maybe it's more pessimism on like the Minnesota side than optimism on the OKC side. But if I had to pick, I think okay. So also if OKC ends up three, like there's a chance I'd rather play like New Orleans right now is the favorite to be number six. I might rather play New Orleans than like Phoenix or the Lakers.
100%.
Or Phoenix or the Warriors in like the 7-8. So looking at like how the matchups are breaking, if Denver can get one and it's Minnesota 2, OKC 3, I actually see a path for OKC to actually go on a run where, you know, I think it's all going to depend on that. But if I
it feels like the Western Conference semifinals, if it is 2-3 with OKC and Denver, that's like the Western Conference finals. And then whoever like that can be like the de facto one. And then we actually get to the Western Conference finals like, oh, they we already saw the Western Conference finals and they went in four or five games. Like they just that team's because like the confidence that you get from I hope we get OKC Denver in a 7-game series, because I think that would be great for Chet. I mean, the little things with Chet, you talk about like he'd be working year any other year. I mean, he's like 18-8-3, but he's also shooting like 45% from three. He's top 10 3-point shooter in the league this year. Like that's crazy town. Like Chet's already like an elite 3-point shooter.
He is really good at shooting three. Like that's typically a like in the modern NBA, that is part of the recipe for being a good playoff team. Is like
he's the best 3-point shooter on the team.
So yeah, and I think also like their dribble penetration, their offense, like they have these funky guard to guard screens and just like I like how they play. I think the upside is there, and I think all those guys are ready for the moment. I don't look at any of those guys as like the lights being too bright. So I think I have more questions about Minnesota to be like if you're asking me which team is more likely, I'll kind of tweak the question. Which team is more likely to be upset in round one? I definitely think it's Minnesota.
Anthony Edwards, I just am so curious to see what it looks like come playoff time. I want to see how much of a difference, because I think we're going to see a different level. I wonder too with the league. I mean, what's better for the league? Like the Thunder to come through and the Thunder to just show that like they're the new Spurs and they make a deep Western Conference finals run and it looks like they're the next big core team, the big rival to the Nuggets in the coming years? Or is it better for Anthony Edwards to be the best player, not named Nikola Jokic, and we see Anthony Edwards put out like 38 points per game, like every playoff game, and you're just like, oh, Anthony Edwards has another gear. And he is legitimately kind of like Joel Embiid in a way, where he's just refusing to let his teammates and everything else bring him down. Like, I don't know. What do you think is the better storyline for the league, and what would they rather have?
I think Ant is the better storyline for the league. He's charismatic. He's very marketable. He's an actor. I thought he was really good in Hustle. And I think that the future is very bright for him. So, and to be clear, like the Minnesota pessimist, I know I mentioned Ant, but it's more of just like stars have to go through their growing pains. And who knows? Maybe SGA is still going to go through his growing pains in this postseason, just as being like the clear cut number one guy on a team with high expectations. Like maybe SGA doesn't have a great postseason and I'm wrong. I just think with Ant, I think there's going to be just so much on his shoulders, because the offense really devolves into like Ant, go get us a bucket. And he can do it more often than not. But when he can't, their offense just gets very clunky late in games. And especially with teams being able to game plan for that, I think Minnesota's offense is much more predictable than OKC's offense is. And you could run more stuff through Jalen Williams, through Josh Giddey, even through Chet. In ways that, I mean, Mike Conley is a professional and he's solid, and like Cat is still an all-star level guy. But I just, again, like my concerns are really more with the rest of the Wolves roster than they are with Ant. But I think from the league perspective, Ant and him growing into, I mean, let's also like call a spade, like him being an American star, like I think that matters compared to SGA is a Canadian star. And of course, like the league is promoting the game on a global level, but I do think on some level, like, who's like the great American star right now? If you were listing out, I mean, you could make a case that you know, go down the MVP candidates like Jokic, Luka, Giannis, Shea, and Embiid before he got injured.
Well, I think like, everybody's waiting for Tatum to be it, right? Like Tatum's been the one you expected to be it.
And he's like, I think he's there to an extent, but I mean, like Ant has the bet. Like I think with Ant, there's just this magnetism to him where he's got the bravado. He's got the cocky, you know, attitude, and he like even the branding with his shoes and like the commercial that he had and just all that stuff. Like, I think it he just has a certain level of like branding and personality that, an SGA doesn't have and a Tatum doesn't have, quite frankly. So I think like Ant going on a conference finals run, I think would be better for the league. So I mean, maybe it plays out that way, but I trust the Thunder a little bit more than the Timberwolves.
Speaking of Luka, final thing here, Jovan, is Luka your MVP with a week to go here in the season? Why or why not?
No, he is not. My MVP is Nikola Jokic. I think he's the best player in basketball. And I think it's kind of reminding me of the LeBron run in the late 2000s and early 2010s, where you almost have to create an argument to not give it to him. And I love Luka. He's one of my favorite players to watch. He's also, like, so I guess full disclosure, like I'm half Serbian. Jokic is Serbian. Luka's also technically half Serbian. So I have affinities to both players just from like a personal standpoint of my Balkan brothers succeeding in the NBA and being arguably the two best players in the league. But I look at Jokic, I think he should have won MVP. Like, I had a vote last year. I don't think I have a vote this year. I voted Jokic MVP. I think I was on the right side of history with how the playoffs played out. And I know it's a regular season award, but like, he was the heavy favorite to win it at the time before, you know, there started being different storylines in the media in terms of, you know, what people were voting for the award and all this different stuff. So like, that kind of derailed his campaign. And I think like, he probably should just be a three-time MVP right now and going, and then, you know, maybe I'd feel differently. Not that necessarily matters, but I just look at it like he's the best player in the league. I think if you were asking all 30 GMs pick one player to win tomorrow, I think at least 25 of them would pick Jokic, if not more. So that to me is like he had a dominant playoff run. He's been dominant for several years now. And he's the best player in the league. And then it's also backed up by, if you look at, I'm a big advanced metrics guy, like most of the advanced metrics, he's number one in the league, if not top five at a minimum. Luka's still in the mix. Luka's top three, top five in a lot of them, but Jokic is ahead in most of them. And then also looking at, like, you can make the case, okay, well, Denver, like, look at that starting lineup. It's arguably the best lineup in the league. Jokic has more talent around him, but the Nuggets are 20 points per 100 possessions worse with Jokic off the floor than, you know, compared to when he's on the floor. And that is a much smaller difference with Dallas, 9 points per 100 possessions. Yeah. So, like, Jokic is actually the biggest gap of any of the MVP candidates. Like, Shea's around 12, Giannis is around 10, Tatum, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's also somewhere in that, like, range. So,
he's number two in plus minus, player plus minus, right behind Jokic.
Yeah, so, like, Denver just falls apart when Jokic is on the floor. And, like, even compared to Dallas to Denver, Kyrie Irving has played in more games than Jamal Murray. So even having like your number two, it's a one game difference, but still, like, I know Kyrie's been injured. Dallas has had a lot of injuries, but Jamal Murray's missed a lot of time. And like the Nuggets offense is really a two man game between Jokic and Murray. And the fact that like he's been able to figure it out without Murray for large stretches with Reggie Jackson starting and like the drop off with the Nuggets bench. Like, I think Dallas is deeper than Denver. I trust more guys on Dallas's bench than I do Denver. It's probably close, but like Denver's bench gets real thin real quickly.
For Denver, right? Like, they get, because they know you need Jamal Murray to be playoff Jamal. So it's like he gets all this rest and Reggie gets all this.
Yeah. No, I think Kyrie's probably been better than Jamal in like a regular
season. I'm just saying, like, with Jamal, we know it's just a blessing in disguise not to have him and get all this run, and you just have Jamal because, like, what you need is, like, he's one of the best playoff basketball players we've seen. Like, Jokic is obviously amazing, but, like, Jamal, we've seen just him go nuclear twice now.
Trust me, I've seen it plenty of times. I've seen it plenty of times this season, but I guess that was my long way of saying, I think it's Jokic. I think he's the best player in the league.
Do you think he wins it ultimately, though?
Based on the last ESPN straw poll, which I'm a participant in, he was in the lead. I think it's going to be Luka's having historic numbers, like the 34 points a game. If you add in his assists, he is contributing to more points per game than any player in NBA history. So, like, that alone is ridiculous. Yeah. And I think if Luka wins, like, I don't have an issue with it. Like, I have to make a choice. So if I'm making a choice, I would pick Jokic. But between Jokic, Shea, and Luka, I think you can make it. Because, again, we talked about Shea and the Thunder. Like, I think that team was a borderline, like, you know, 6-8 seed entering the season. The fact that they've been a top 2 seed for most of the year, even if they finish 3, they're right there with those other two teams. Like, that to me is, yes, Chet has been great as a rookie. Jalen Williams has taken a big step. Mark Daigneault is one of the best coaches in the league. They have some solid depth there, but it's really been Shea taking a leap from an all-star to a superstar, like top 5 guy in the league. And like that, we know, like, you need one of those guys to be a true contender. The Thunder have that. And that to me is Shea taking his game to a different level. So I think Shea deserves to be mentioned alongside those two. Like, that should be the top 3 in some order. But if I had to pick one, I would go Jokic.
Yeah, I wonder, like, it's one of those things where people wonder about Embiid, where they're like, are they going to just give him one? Because we just know he's been one of the 3 best that year. And it's like, you just kind of, it'd be weird in history that he just never had one. And Luka, at a certain point, where you're like, it's just a little weird that Luka has been one of the best players and he just doesn't have one. And it's like you said with LeBron and some of this fatigue here, where people are looking for reasons to not give it to Jokic at this point. But I'm right there with you. I think a lot of people would be upset if it ends up being Luka. I could see nationally or certain fan bases not a fan of it going that way. But I don't know. I think it's Luka's been unbelievable. I think it's still Jokic, but it wouldn't surprise me if it goes down. You don't see it being anybody else, right? Like, it feels like it's one of those two at this point.
I think Shea is gonna be number 2. I think Shea was 2nd in the latest straw poll, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was.
I just don't see it. I just don't see Shea getting it.
I would agree that I think Luka's making, because, like, the other thing here was Dallas was in the play-in for a lot of the season, and they've gone on this surge here to now get into 5th, and as you mentioned earlier, win 50 games. Yeah. So they might end up winning 52, might finish 52-30. So, like, that's a solid MVP season, finishing top 5. Like, typically you got to be really good. You got to be like top 3.
Yeah.
But we've seen situations where guys are like top 5 or top 6. It's very rarely like lower than that. So I think he's hit the thresholds. And again, like, historic numbers, like, I don't have an issue.
I mean,
with
he's
Luka.
Throwing floaters in from just below the 3-point line. Like, he's just making, he's hitting like just, and like, he's just hitting playground shots now. It just feels like he's doing just silly stuff. He's just mastered it too much.
He's crazy. But I also think that, like, it just does remind me of, I guess I'm not trying to make this comparison, because I think higher of Luka than I do. But, like, I look at the 2011, this is maybe not the best, but, like, the fact that LeBron was like 3rd in 2011 in MVP voting, and, like, Derrick Rose had a special season, but when they matched up in the playoffs, it was just like, these two guys are not on the same level. Like, LeBron James is clearly the better player, and even Dwight Howard finished ahead of him in 2011. And I just, like, sometimes I think we overthink these things, and it's like when Karl Malone wins the MVP award during Michael Jordan's run. It's just like, Jokic is the best player. Like, I think most 9 out of 10 NBA fans would agree with that. So why are we? And it's not like, I mean, his team, they might finish as the 1 seed. He's almost averaging a 30 or 26 point triple double as a center, which is like just absolutely absurd. I mean, it's not like his numbers are shabby either. So, because even like some of the LeBron years, you can make the case like Kevin Durant had better numbers, or, you know, Steph was on the rise or whatever. And like they had better numbers or their teams were better. Really, by the end of the season, like I think most people have Denver as like at worst the number two team in the league. So unless you're picking Jason Tatum, which most people won't, yeah. I don't really see the counterpoint to picking Jokic.
I love it. Jovan, you have a podcast now. Your YouTube's doing great. I love it. Boaz Block, you're obviously still covering the Lakers for The Athletic, but what can the good folks check out from you across the podcast and the writing front this week?
Yeah, so check out my work at The Athletic. I just wrote about the Lakers, kind of did a, as we talked about earlier, just sort of an autopsy of where things went wrong this season, and not an obituary yet because the season is not over, but still just kind of dissecting where I think things went wrong. And then at Jovan Buha on all social platforms, and then check out my YouTube channel, Jovan Buha. I'm doing post game reactions after every game and doing a podcast now twice a week on YouTube. So it's been a lot of fun, a lot more work, but I've really enjoyed it, dipping my toe in this space, and it's been a fun couple of months.
I love it. Jovan, keep up the great work, sir. And I will talk to you again very soon.
It's good to see you.
All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm now joined by a first timer on the program, someone I've read for many years. She's at GoVols247. You've seen her all across Knoxville local television this week, whether it's WVLT, WVR, who knows where you might see a Muir. Wow, Maria Cornelius on this just very exciting time here at Tennessee, just across the board at everything school HQ. But the Lady Vols conduct their first out of the Pat Summit tree hire this week, and it was one where I imagine, Maria, you had a whirlwind of a weekend. What was it, the lead up for this last week for you like?
It, Thursday is when we first started hearing the name. The name was being mentioned then. So at that point, you just start looking for anything you could find about Coach Kim Caldwell, and you start crafting a story. So when it happens, you're ready to go. And then you basically have every notification turned on your phone. You're calling people, trying to see if anybody's heard. You also start following people in West Virginia media, because it's been my experience with coaching searches, if it breaks, it tends to break out of their home market.
Yeah.
So you start doing that. And then Saturday, I thought, yeah, I didn't think they would announce it on Saturday at all. I mean, that's right in the middle of the men's Final Four semifinals. Right. And Saturday's just not a breaking news kind of day. Sunday afternoon, it started getting out that this is coming right now. So everybody get ready. We could sort of see that developing on Twitter. Part of that is the women's championship game was Sunday. You can't have that many reporters and writers in one place and something like this not break. I mean, I'm sure it was being talked about a lot in Cleveland. So that's when you start to realize, all right, this is happening.
Were you surprised it ended up being, because there was a lot of smoke early on that Kim Caldwell might end up being the target for Danny White, and who might end up being the next Tennessee Vols or Lady Vols head coach. Was it kind of a surprise for you that it didn't end up being a smokescreen and it wasn't a more exhaustive, expansive search, because this is the first time they've gone outside the Pat Summit tree this cycle?
I saw where some people mentioned that a smokescreen, and you have to realize covering Lady Vols, we don't do coaching searches. I mean, this is only the second one in the history of the program. So I had no real, and I often said I felt sorry for all the beat writers on the men's side because of all the coaching searches and AD searches they have been through. We were just coasting along on the Lady Vols side. And then you have your first one in 2019. And then 5 years later, you have another one. If you had told me Monday when, you know, Kelly was first let go, that the next coach at Tennessee would come from Marshall, I probably would have been stunned. Yeah. By the time it got into the end of the week and her name was coming up, then it was like, all right, this may be happening. And I mean, looking at her, this is a big step. Nobody's going to try to sugarcoat that this is not a, this is a huge step. Looking at her overall record, her philosophy, I can see where she would be attractive if you're trying to do what Danny White is doing. Is it a gamble? Absolutely. It's a big gamble for him, for her. Personally, am I pulling for her? Yes, because I don't want to go through another coaching search. This is plenty. I'm done with coaching searches. Let's just, I don't know how reporters deal with coaching searches. You don't sleep.
Yeah.
Tracking everything. It's, I do not want any more coaching searches. So let's go.
What, when you look at, I mean, we talk about the, she's young and she's, like Kelly Harper came in obviously as a champion with Pat Summitt years ago. And she came in with a lot of experience. Like a lot of people may have had questions about what her ceiling was at Tennessee. I think that was one of the questions of like, how much could she really win at Tennessee versus where she's been previously. But she like with Kim though, I think what's most fascinating is it feels like to me, Kelly had more of a high floor, where you kind of knew that it would be solid. At worst case scenario with Kelly at UT, with the resources that we have, that what the position that she was walking into, that Tennessee Lady Vols basketball would be solid. I mean, you went back to back Sweet 16s. Like there was, like we kind of saw that play out that way. With Kim, it seems like Danny White's more of a, this is a boom or bust type deal. Do you have that same sentiment where you think we'll know within a couple years if Kim is a home run long-term hire, or this was just too much too soon for a coach who just became a Division One head coach last year? Like, do you think this will be one of those kind of deals?
It's definitely risky. I like what I've heard so far. I do think people need to be patient. I mean, the roster needed reinforcements before Kelly left.
Yeah.
And the portal is popping, and Tennessee hasn't been, you know, basically during a coaching search, everything is on pause. It's on hold. So she needs to build a roster that can play at this level. Does anyone expect that to happen in the next 2 months? I hope not. I mean, the level she wants to play. I mean, if she can keep the returning players on board and pluck some veterans out of the portal, Tennessee can be competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, there is enough talent on that roster coming back. You know, Jill Spear, Sarah Puckett, Jillian Hollingshed. She's poised for a breakout season. You know, Talasia Cooper, can Tennessee keep her? Kanaya Boyd, the freshman that enrolled in January, a very good defensive player. So I'll be very curious to see how Tennessee can bolster this roster with what they need and then compete in the SEC. I do think there has to be time. There has to be grace period given to get your arms around this. I mean, even if you had brought in a veteran Power Five coach, even that coach would still need time to get their arms around it. Tennessee is a lot. Tennessee fans are a lot. It is a big job, and I like the West Virginia attitude, the tone and tenor, the sense of humor. I like it. It's a different sense of humor. The story she told about her grandmother, I mean, you know, cracked me up about telling her 96-year-old grandmother she was going to Knoxville. And then her grandmother said, I have a lot of friends in Knoxville, and then said, but I think they're all dead. So I know. I'm like, that is so West Virginia. If you've like Alexis Hornbuckle's from West Virginia, has one of the most deadpan sense of humors you'll ever. It's a different Mary Ostrowski, a famous Lady Vol from West Virginia. It is a different breed of person. And it's tough. That's a tough state to grow up in. It is so cold.
Yeah.
And I traveled there for her homecoming game. I'm like, boy, this is beautiful. And then I got out of the car and I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, it's like, it's not for me. That's funny. Do you think, so it sounds like she might have like the kind of, like it's still really early. We've just seen early impressions in the press conference and little things, but it does seem like she has the kind of demeanor that will make it easy. And you would know better than anybody here of like walking in Pat's shadow. She seems to have the kind of personality that will be able to handle that and kind of run with that. Did you get that same sense?
And she didn't play for Pat.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference. Kelly and Holly played for Pat. Pat echoes all over that arena.
Yeah.
Her pictures I mean, the memories, they're in her office. I mean, they sit in Pat's old office.
Yeah.
They hear her voice. I mean, her voice pipes in on video or audio during the We Back Pat game.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I mean, that gutted both of them to lose Pat. I mean, particularly Holly, who was here and watched Pat deteriorate and then die. I mean, Holly was right there for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kelly comes in and has been gone. She's been gone for 20 years. So, but even then, that passage of time, it hit. You could see that there's times it just hit Kelly, like hearing Pat. She even talked about it after a We Back Pat game, hearing Pat's voice and say it, telling her players, wait a minute, that's my coach talking. Just give me a second. So, does Kim Caldwell have a big task at hand? Yes. I mean, right now, I can't imagine what her to-do list looks like. I mean, she has got to do everything right now. She has got to get in the portal. She's got to reach out to 2025. She's got to keep her team. I mean, step number one is keep the team you have.
Right.
So they need FaceTime with her and ability to talk to her and meet with her. Then you've got to try to make sure your 2025 recruits are, you know, that you're still going after them because they're waiting to see what the change looks like. So, next week, April 19th, the first high school showcase in-person events from Texas to East Coast to West Coast. So she's got to get on the road and find a staff to take with her. So,
yeah,
it's a lot. Even Kelly said when she got here, she felt like she was drinking out of a fire hose, and she had been through it before.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's got a lot on her plate.
When you think about Kelly and Holly, did it go awry the same way? Did they deal with the same struggles as the Lady Vols head coach? Like, what were some of the differences that you noticed covering both? And what were some of the similarities with their tenure as head coach?
With the Holly's group, they did really well for several years. And then there was a couple seasons where team chemistry just never clicked. And that, I mean, they recruited well. But it was, and even Holly said afterwards, she goes, I wish I had recruited a little less talent and a couple more glue players. Because the chemistry just never, for those last two seasons, never got on track. And you could, I mean, you could see it in that last season with the brutal game where they lost to Vanderbilt at home. And during the breaks in play, you would see Vandy huddled or talking, or, you know, a couple players talking, and Tennessee players just looked adrift.
Yeah.
I mean, just almost unengaged, but in a sad kind of way.
Yeah.
So with Kelly, the pandemic did hurt. You all of a sudden can't recruit in person. It's a lot harder for a new head coach in the SEC. And then high school recruiting, they did so well in the portal. High school recruiting, you know, it faltered at the beginning and then it got better, but then NIL entered. And I mean, Tennessee had a solid class. At least two kids I thought would sign in 2023, and NIL took them away. And I mean, top players.
Yeah.
Top 10, top 25 players. So the NIL has got to be fixed. There comes a cap. There's patches. NIL absolutely has got to be fixed for women's basketball. That's not really Kim's job, but she has to be up, you know, visible and supportive of it and that type of thing. That comes from, you know, your collectives and your fans and sponsors and donors.
Something I wondered about, I mean, one of the ones that I think I wonder if it's just going to sit with Kelly for a long time is just if the Bank Three doesn't go in against South Carolina and Tennessee wins that game. Do you think we're here? Do you think Kelly Harper doesn't?
No, I think now my cat's attacking me. I think you're exactly right. If they beat South Carolina, we're not here. And that's a brutal, brutal thing for Kelly to have to process. When Tennessee had the chance to cut that NC State lead from 4-2 and they missed the, you know, they granted a timeout after the ball was clearly in play. The replay showed the ball had left the player's hand inbounding, and then the official's arm goes up. You know, Kelly was apoplectic. I don't blame her. I mean, Jewel was right there. Now it's a 2-point game. And then suddenly NC State gets the ball back, hits a bucket, and now instead of being down two, you're down at least two scores. So it's Kelly can what if those two March games until she could lose her mind. I wish her well. I don't know what she wants to do next, but I will be keeping up with her. She's a Lady Ball for life. So is Holly. Yeah.
And what do you think she does? What would you guess based on what you know about Kelly? What do you think she does next?
She loves coaching. I mean, it's her passion. It's what she does. I mean, I would think she would want to stay in it, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, this isn't like losing your job at NC State.
Right.
This is your alma mater. She loves Tennessee. She loves Tennessee football. She loves Tennessee sports. This cuts you in half.
Yeah.
Like it did Holly. And Holly had the disadvantage too. This is her hometown.
Yeah.
Most coaches, you leave, you go back to somewhere else. Holly lives here.
Yeah. So I think the positive, though, is like one of the things that I think stuck out to me of just reading the different pieces and reading how people talked about Kelly is just that everyone just felt so bad. Like the whole situation was just everyone, like she can stay in Knoxville or Holly can stay here. And I think people were really rooting hard for it all to work out. So it's not going to be one of those situations where you just kind of have to hide, because I think she would still be embraced wherever she goes. People are going to be thankful for the time, thankful for the years, thankful for the championships as a player. Like, I think that would be something that would provide reassurance, I think, if for Holly and Kelly, is that like, even though it did not work out at your alma mater, I think most people still have a positive sentiment towards them and will continue to do so long after they're the head coach of the Vols.
I agree, but I think Holly, I think it took her 2 years to come to a game.
Yeah.
I mean, this is their life. This is who they are. This is their identity as a Lady Vol. And it's brutal. And when it first, the news broke about Kelly Harper, I was like, maybe it's time to get out of that tree. It's brutal to do that to players, the former players. It's brutal to do that to a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, there was no heir apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there wasn't anyone who had separated themselves that much in that tree. I think most people expected it to be outside the tree in a Power Five.
You never thought Kara Lawson was realistic?
No, because the one I was, I mean, she likes what she has at Duke, and then she did reach a Sweet 16, but Duke finished, I think, seventh in the ACC last year. I think we're out in the second round last year. I didn't see that as what fitting this vision of what Danny White was saying. I think it's got to be a better resume.
Yeah.
And then what they ultimately did, like you said, he's banking on a future, that this is an up and coming coach who appears to be on a very sharp trajectory up. And did he want to hire her before some other Power Five school did? Well, I mean, time will tell. I mean, this is one thing where time will tell relatively quickly.
Yes.
Whether this was a brilliant move or one that is going to be that he'll regret. I mean, but I liked what I heard out of her. And
it kind of does it remind you at all of the Bruce Pearl hire, where he comes out of nowhere and then he just kind of embraces Tennessee and just becomes kind of, I mean, obviously with Bruce and Pat and what that was like for Tennessee during that window. I mean, does it have some of that feeling to you?
Yeah. I mean, Bruce had a different personality. I mean, Bruce, I mean, and now he has had so much success at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly knows how to coach. I mean, I know it was a Division II national title, but that's hard to win a national title at any level. I mean,
she's won a conference title every year she's been a head coach, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then went to Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
First year, didn't have, basically had the same roster, but I think added a couple transfers, and they win the conference and win the tournament and get an NCAA bid. So she clearly has the ability to do this. It's just, what is the timeline? What is the patience level? And how quickly can Tennessee elevate itself in the SEC? Now, it's not like Tennessee was awful in the SEC. Yeah. I mean, Tennessee finished either third or fourth. They finished in the, tied for fourth, and then either third, tied for third the other year. So it wasn't like you know, they were at the bottom half of the SEC, but the SEC is just beastly. You've got South Carolina, LSU, and now Oklahoma and Texas on the way. It's it's a super conference of women's basketball right now.
Who do you think, when you think about her style, what Kim's going to bring? Obviously, she shoots a lot of threes, a lot of steals. It's going to be high pressure, high efficiency offense. Who do you think on this current team will benefit the most if they do end up committing to play for Kim in this new era of ladies ball basketball? Who do you go to? Where does your mind go of like who will really pop under this style?
Jewel Spear would be ideal for it. I mean, her ability to shoot threes. Avery Strickland, we didn't get to see much of her because she had the double concussions. I mean, literally, she got out of protocol and got hit in the face, I think, at the Middle Tennessee game.
Yeah.
And when you've got back-to-back concussions, now you're really set back on the protocol. So she got – I mean, you can't do anything. She probably didn't practice or do anything for 3 weeks until you've passed that protocol, and then you've got to ease back.
Yeah.
She's a very athletic player, multi-sport athlete in Farragut High School here, and she can shoot. I would love to see what her development could be over the summer and how she can perform healthy next year.
I like it. Well, ultimately, we'll end it on here, Maria. What does your gut tell you? Do you think Kim works out, or do you think this will be just a big swing and a miss? What's your gut tell you on which way this goes?
I think she'll figure it out. And part of that is I'm sending that into the universe because I don't want any more coaching searches.
You're adamant. You are absolutely done with this. You're one and done. You're like, this is too much. I'm out. Yeah,
I mean, there were zero coaching searches in the history of the program, and now there's been two in the last 10 years. So I mean, she's intriguing. The upside is very high. You can hear it when she talks. She knows how she wants to play. She knows what she wants to do. There was an exchange on Twitter that I saw. She was in there where the twins that Alicia Manning, former Lady Vol Alicia Manning, now is with Ohio Extreme. It's an AAU program. She's director. And those two twins, one of them retweeted the part that I did on WATE about talking about them. And she came in and was talking to I can't remember because I don't want to say the wrong one, but it was one of the twins that played for Pierce is their last name. And she put up double exclamation points and said, "You must not have told them about the eights." I mean, clearly some kind of practice drill. And I've heard players talk about how, you know, players hate her and then they love her.
Yeah.
So if she brings, you know, she could bring some of that toughness of you know, Pat, because Pat didn't mind her. I mean, her players were, they didn't like her either when they played for her, but then they came to love her. And she has a sense of purpose. She seems to understand what she wants to do. I think she just right now needs to get her arms around it, get a staff in place, and consider some experience on the staff who has recruited at this level. It's a whole different, it's shark infested waters out there in women's basketball recruiting. And she has never probably, I don't think Kelly was ready for how negative it got here. I think she was stunned by, she would pursue a kid and that kid was just absolutely bombarded with negative messaging about Tennessee from other schools that want her. Other coaches do not want Tennessee back. It is in their best interest that Tennessee does not get back to the top, because this is a juggernaut if it does. It is literally the mothership of the sport and a fan base just waiting to erupt. And I promise you there's coaches throughout systems that don't want Tennessee back, particularly those that get particular favors for steering kids certain ways or who are trying to negotiate NIL. They're not real thrilled if Tennessee starts coming back. So she's going to find out how quickly she's got to combat negative recruiting. And I mean, it gets ugly, ugly out there with Tennessee.
Fascinating. I love it. Well, Maria, this has been great. What can the good folks check out from you all across GoVols 247 and everywhere else this week?
Yes. I think everybody involved in the coaching search, the writers anyway, need a little rest. So. But I appreciate you asking me to be on, Chase, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun time for the Lady Vols basketball. It's going to be different. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like we're in a new era. I think there's going to be a lot of energy and there's just going to be a lot of curiosity. I think a lot of folks are going to be walking through with just like, I don't really know what to expect. And you've kind of known what to expect for a long time. And it's going to be uncharted waters, but it could be really fun. And I think that's just sometimes uncertainty is fun. And even though you don't want to do it again for a while, you don't want to do the uncertainty again.
Get behind her. Give her a chance. I mean, yeah. Donate. Get season tickets. Renew your season tickets. Don't abandon the program just because maybe things didn't go exactly the way you wanted. Tennessee fans are loyal. They're very loyal. I will give them that. They are passionate and loyal. So, you know, get behind the program. You know, that's what Pat would want. As I said in that column I wrote, Pat would say it is what it is, but it will be what you make it.
I love it. Maria, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it, and we'll have to do it again soon.
All right. Take care.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.